Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, September the 19th, 2014. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And as of right now, I'm not sure what's going on because it shows that there's no one in the chat room, and there's Dale. I started saying I'm the only person on the switchboard, but let's welcome Dale. Hi, how are you doing today on this Aramaic Friday?
Hi, sorry, I'm in Chicago, and I tried to get back to my car. I didn't get quite back to the car as quick as I thought I would. Now I've got to drive out of the parking garage. This is my car, so it's going to be a driving conversation.
Yeah, it's a little bit scratchy, a little bit breaking up just a little, probably all the concrete in the garage. I will just talk a little bit until you can get to a clear space, and Michael will be on with us here in just a moment. And so for those of you who are new to our work and what we do, it's Aramaic forgiveness, and that is not letting another person off the hook for what they bring up in you, but it is actually going inside and looking at what is triggered within you and letting that go. That's forgiveness. So if you and I interact and I become angry, it has nothing to do with letting you off the hook for bringing up my anger, but it's going inside and removing my anger so that no matter what happens in my space, that I can stay connected to who I am. And Michael, as soon as you do get on, I need to disconnect off my computer because it's all messed up right now. And so, and Dale's not with us. Dale's going through trying to get out of a parking garage, so his signal got dropped. And so I'm sure he'll be back on here shortly. And so those guests who are in the chat room, if you sign into Blog Talk, which is just a simple process of getting signed in, then you'll be able to actually chat with us in the chat room. And the whole switchboard system is just really messed up right now, so I'm not chatting with anybody that's in there. And like I said, as soon as Michael gets on, then I will get off so that I can reboot everything. And so we welcome you to the show. And just to give an update of some of the things that we have scheduled, we leave St. Louis in the morning. We're doing a small workshop tonight, just kind of a private workshop. And we leave and head towards Woodstock, Illinois. And we'll be there all next week, starting on Sunday, and then ending next Saturday with Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And then from there, we'll go up to Roscommon, Michigan for a couple of weeks. And then we're doing the Sun Conference in Grand Rapids on October the 11th, followed by a full week of workshops in Grand Rapids. And then the next week, a full week of workshops in Lansing. And then we have about 4 days off, and then we do a 9-day intensive in Pinckney, Michigan, beginning on October 31st. And then we'll be in Bristol, Tennessee for a week of workshops, and then Wilmington, North Carolina. All of these are on the website. I'm getting the rest of them put up, and so just keep an eye on the website for what's new and what's going on. And so call-in number, again, is 646-200-4169, and press 1. And I see Dale's not with us yet. Michael's not with us yet. So if you have any questions about what's going on, press 1. Hopefully the switchboard will operate well enough that I can at least turn you on. So bear with us for just a moment, please.
Well, we've got technology problems today. Perhaps if there's someone on the show that could text me and let me know that we're being heard, I hope that we're there. And Dale, have you been able to connect in with the show yet? It doesn't sound like it. So we're here in technology land. St. Louis is a beautiful sunny day, and we're appreciative of everybody who chooses to join us each day that you choose to join us for this process of learning and understanding the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness. And our work together is that of learning to remove everything that is unlike the active presence of love in us. And Jeannie is in the process of breathing and restarting her computer so that we can get Dale turned on. And she'll probably just shut her computer down and we'll drop her somewhere else, and Dale and I will carry on the conversation. So we're delighted and pleased that you're here to join us. And the Aramaic language is the root of the work that we're doing together. Everything that we're doing is focused in the ancient Aramaic. And that is an interesting language, that in that it is the root language of 6 of the world's major religions, yet it is not a religious language. It seems as the technology has just really got us baffled here right now. And so Jeannie is going to see if she can get her computer rehooked and see if we can get Dale so we can have a conversation. Our apology for the confusion at the moment, but sometimes when you count on technology as complex as this, that's just the way it works. So we're here moving forward with the tools. Use this once again. The situation figured out, and right now it does not seem to be happening. And so let's go back to the Aramaic. The Aramaic language is an interesting language in that it's the root language, as I was saying, of 5 of the world, 6 of the world, at least 6 of the world's major religions. And as such, the reason, at least for me, my take as to why it is the root of each of those religions is not because it's a religious language, but that it is a language that comprehends exactly how the world works. It's a physics language, it's a psychological language, it is a genetic language, and the technology that is supported and understood in that language is absolutely monumental. And in particular, the technology of forgiveness. And when we talk about forgiveness in this work, we're not talking about the culture's idea of I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, because, of course, what's happening inside of me is happening inside of me. It isn't caused by you. Yes, you may be my trigger. You may be the one who showed it to me, but I can't be experiencing it. I can't be feeling it if it's not mine. And once I recognize that it's mine, then I have the opportunity to start to work through it. Working through it means I get the opportunity to learn to forgive.
So, Michael.
Hey, you've got Dr. Tim. Hey.
I do, and I need I need to know what's your best guess about the area code that Dale will be using?
Probably 828, I would suspect, would be Dale's. And actually, Jeannie's having trouble staying on, so I'm going to take her to a wireless hotspot.
All right,
so run a switchboard, and we can carry
Dale,
on the conversation.
Dale, are you on?
I think so. I heard a beep.
All right,
oh,
there we go.
I had to get out of a parking garage I was in, and I just parked on the side of the road and paid my fee, and now I'm sitting here in Chicago. So I'm not driving because I don't want to drive and do it. So, got to focus.
For sure. Awesome. Well, a little bit of confusion to start with, but, you know, when you figure that here you are in Chicago and we're in St. Louis and Dr. Tim is in Crystal Lake and the technology that we're using is in New York City, you know, and we have got a global audience, you know, a glitch here and there is pretty minor compared to the opportunity that affords us to be able to do this. So we'll just let Jeannie let go of the connection that she's got. And we'll get her to a wireless hotspot. And in the meantime, I was just talking about the idea, Dale, that the Aramaic is a physics language, a physiological language, a psychological language, and a genetic language. It's not one that's about theology. What would your take be on that?
You know, I honestly feel, I've said this before, but if I hadn't come in with, you know, putting it into practice and coming in on the experiential level of the Aramaic, and I don't just mean experiential as in getting a buzz from making a sound or something like that or something woo-woo, but actually getting it to work and you know, the way you would say putting the pen to the paper and actually doing it and getting inside the language, I'm quite sure that it would have been a lot more difficult if it would have happened at all for me to really be able to see like the deeper aspects of what Yeshua was saying and what the language can communicate, if I just kind of learned it in like some sort of institution with four walls and the same books that everybody else has been learning from, rather than getting into, you know, being able to, it's almost like going in on an experiential level enabled me to be able to sort of go out of phase or out of focus on the supposed, you know, well, widely accepted facts, and I put facts in quotes, of what certain words or things mean, and I was able to take a step back and kind of just look at it from a much deeper level and get it, you know, on those deeper nuance levels that, honestly, even when I meet native Aramaic speakers, only about maybe one out of every 10 of them, and I meet quite a few, even realize the deeper, you know, when you speak of the physiology and the physics and the phonetics, you know, there's even a small portion of the actual native speakers that get that. And I think the reason for that may be that, as an example, me being raised with English, it wouldn't be quite as easy for me to see things looking at the English language as someone coming from a different language would be able to see, because they would see certain common denominators, they would see certain root meanings that I may not be able to see in English that I never thought about. And I think that's the key, is it's like I feel so grateful that I didn't have to unlearn a lot of supposed facts about not only Aramaic, but about what Yeshua was trying to communicate to us, so that I was able to just let it unfold and let it unpack through my own heart by actually putting it into practice, not by obsessing about books, not by obsessing about even the language itself, but rather about living it, you know? And I'm still amazed. I can say it with a smile on my face. I'm amazed when people, occasional interviews I do, or occasionally someone, you know, in an audience or whatever, or someone will communicate to me and they don't get the understanding. They're like, what's the point of what I'm doing? Because it's already been set in stone what all this stuff means, you know, all of the, and of course that's usually only about 200 years old of ideas that have just been locked in from those European ideas of what Yeshua was trying to communicate. And it's like, I find it so fascinating that, to me, one of the number one things that Yeshua said was be open, to be in conscious contact with the One, the Undivided, the Absolute. And it's like, it's not even allowed into the equation in many of the sort of circles that I was in within the scholarly realm. They you know, in conscious contact with the Creator, to be lived through, you know, to be, you know, of sound heart, mind, and body, to love the Lord your God, you know, or love the one, the absolute truth, with all of your heart, all of your mind, all of the breath of your life, and all of your willingness and strength. It didn't make any sense to a lot of these people. And I'm just, it's amazing to me because it's very clear when you take a step back and you just allow yourself to look at the absolute barest nuance of what's there in the Aramaic, to me it seems so incredibly clear. And it's just, it's an awesome experience to be able to see that, especially when I've been looking at, I could look at one phrase for 20 years now, and the amazing thing is I could, you know, possibly not see that nuance until next week. So I'm always remaining open. I'm always just simply, I'm staying open for that greater understanding, that greater truth through me. And that's the physiology of it. And to me, that's the physics of it. Because when you're open, you get it on that energetic level. It's not just this sort of mental, mind-numbing thing that we get into by memorizing what people think something means. You're able to allow the meaning to sort of open up within your heart and flower like a lotus. And it's just an amazing, amazing experience, the things that I see in Aramaic that, and a little bit in Hebrew, though the Hebrew's been so sort of religified, if that's a word, which I don't think it is, but it is an awesome language. And, you know, of course, the teachings are awesome. Wow, I really went off there.
The idea that Yeshua expresses to me is such a genius piece in the whole puzzle, where he says, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. For those who having eyes do not see, those who having ears, they do not hear. And recognizing that, of course, he's not talking about physical eyes and ears, but he's talking about having the brain cells. And one can only perceive through the body's mind what the body's mind has brain cells for. And so if one gets locked into a brainwash, especially a brainwash based in fear and or hostility, which is what most of the world is doing, then the brain cells they have inject or color everything with the meaning that's in those brain cells. And so, you know, something as simple as, you know, what linguist, my fortunate experience was that I started out in the world of electronics and side study in physics. And when I found Yeshua's Aramaic teachings, and I hear, you know, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, I know he's not talking about bread. He's talking about something at another level. And so I'll, when you recognize, this is critical mass in physics. Gee, maybe we need to look at this whole teaching through our physics brain cells rather than our religious brain cells, because in essence, the whole teaching is void of religion. The teaching is about how this energy system called life works and how to function out of that active presence of love that we are. And to start to see it through those brain cells just transforms absolutely everything in such a monumental way. And then when you acquire the tools and put the tools to work in your life, everything goes to a whole other level, because you get to undo the brainwash of the brain cells you've been filled with from the beginning based in fear and hostility. To me, the main tool that was disappeared, and as you say often, your appreciation for coming into the forgiveness work, you know, the main tool that Yeshua taught was disappeared by the Greeks. When it was translated into Greek, all of a sudden forgiveness became this, letting other people off the hook, not let go of your own brainwash. If your brainwash is fear about God, then everything you think about God will come from a state of fear. If you're brainwashed to think that you're a worm groveling in the earth and you're a sinner, as opposed to understanding and having the brain cells that the word sin simply means, it's an archery term that means off the mark, and that if you've got an energy that's off the mark in you, you better get about forgiving it, you better get about removing it. And so as you apply the main tool that Yeshua taught and remove what doesn't belong, everything else just starts to open up, and it's pretty awesome.
You just popped it right on the head when you said, of course you know this, when you were speaking of when so many look at the teachings, whether it's in Aramaic or English or Greek or whatever it may be, if you don't understand forgiveness, you don't understand and have that deep experience of that you're not actually, if you don't understand forgiveness, you're not going to see what's actually there. You're just going to see what's triggered from your brain cells, you know, from your mind, from your past. If you don't get that, you have nothing. I'm not sure what all, I'm hearing like all kinds of static and stuff. I'm not sure if that's on my end or. It's quiet now, but.
Go for it, Dale. I think that was on my end, so I just hit my mute button, but yes.
Oh, okay.
Developing these eyes to see in the ears is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's, if there's any sort of, you know, bump in the road that I experience in my work, it's sort of helping people understand that it's not about fitting it into the box of their past experiences of what they've been programmed to about what Jesus did or didn't say or could or couldn't say or whatever, any of those teachings or the language itself. It's about being able to let go of everything that we think we already know and be open in the experience to have that direct relationship with what's there and put it into practice, not to fit it into some kind of, and it's not that there's necessarily that I'm bashing learning something in a school or an institution, but the issue is that you go to a theological academy or a seminary or something like that, 99 out of 100 times, you're just going to get what's programmed, you know, what they're seeking for you to be programmed with, and then you're no longer actually seeing the teachings, you're simply seeing the frame you've laid over them. And if you don't understand forgiveness, which is removing that frame, you're not going to see what's actually there. There's no chance. There's just no chance.
Well, it ties right back in, too, to the actual definition of the word education. Comes from the root educare, means to draw out. It does not mean to put in. And we talk about sending kids to institutions of so-called higher learning, that is, in most cases, a higher brainwash that the culture has. And we put a kid under high stress. We fill their minds with information that make for the quote-unquote right answers. They pass, they get, a keyway into making all kinds of money. And so the brainwash perpetuates itself, and on it goes into every aspect of the culture. You know, it speaks in the ancient teachings of there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled, and those who have been so-called educated, that is, indoctrinated, because most of, you know, filling a mind with information as opposed to drawing into expression the being that's there is indoctrination at best and brainwashing at worst. And so you take a kid, it's like you open the top of their head, you fill them with information, they have all the right answers, and now they're approved of to go make money. And that system produces a culture that's insane. Well, gee, but Michael, look at all the things we've got. We've got fancy cars and beautiful houses and computers, and we've gone to the moon. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. And most people still whip and beat their kids at every turn. Well, I shouldn't say most people. Hopefully that one's changing. But too many people beat their kids. You know, how many people today, you know, we know out of the military that 25 young men and women are going to kill themselves today who are free of the military. They're out of it. It would seem like they should be done with it. And yet today, tomorrow, the next day, 25 of them each day are going to kill themselves. Why? Because they don't have forgiveness. They don't know how to remove what has been put into their structures that never belonged in a human structure. And so the whole culture becomes insane. The whole world is fooled. And few are those who will find the way, who will say, I need to undo the brainwash. Then I'm open to a direct teaching from the Creator. Now there's a whole different experience available. And that's what we're, of course, working to share and to give people in the way of a direct experience of the active presence, literally, of love within their structures 24/7, 365. The world has called that love God, made up a theological monstrosity, and brainwashed most everybody with terror about it. and the theological monstrosity doesn't live up to its name, has nothing to do with the name that's been developed by the world. We are embraced in an active energy field that we can't even start to comprehend. And the root of the energy field is the active presence of love. Let's go have that experience first, then let's talk about the other stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, that really begins in so many ways with humility and just being able to let go for one microsecond. I think that, well, that's it. I mean, that's it, and that's the forgiveness. It's letting go. It's letting go of what you think you already know, letting go of what you're laying over the present moment. You're not actually having that open experience in that present moment. You're literally just rehashing something from your past. Man, I mean, that's why I'm so completely on the team, so to speak, with when you say to bring these tools to every mind on the planet. People, there's not even a thought involved when people ask me, okay, what's the one most important thing? I don't think about it. It just comes right out. I was like, you must understand what it means to forgive, you know? And, that was, I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago how I was, listening to a recording of a class, done by someone who, you know, also uses a worksheet, et cetera. And they went through their whole worksheet process. I was listening to it while I was driving, and I was like, wow, there was no in this particular thing. What was interesting was that, it's great that some aspect of the work is getting out there. It was interesting to me because some of your worksheet was there word for word. Well, I thought that was kind of intriguing, but, you know, whatever. But the thing that really got me was that there was no identification of the goal. There was no identification of what it was what was being held on to. And then there was no canceling the goal. There was no actual forgiveness. I kept hearing words, even in that sheet, about off the hook, letting that person off the hook and letting yourself off the hook. And I was like, wow, that's pardoning. That's not forgiveness. And it was another thing that sort of really strengthened my vision. Resolve may be the word to use too, of making sure to get that clarity into everything that I do, that people understand that. And listening to that recording, it was about 3 weeks ago, it re-sparked or it re-solidified and re-rooted my commitment to make sure that every single gathering that I offer, that comes out at some point in that gathering, regardless of what the focus may be. I've got to remember to put it out there. This is the absolute taproot of the entire thing, is to understand forgiveness and to practice it and to live it, to remove the layer of the past experiences of that hidden past off of the present moment so that you can actually have that full experience. And it's, you know, I use a buffalo hoop drum in a lot of my talks to show people the difference between someone else's experience and your own. As an example, focusing on Jesus and what Jesus said and memorizing what Jesus said, regardless of the translation, even if it's Aramaic, that's not putting it into practice and that's not living it, although that's become the mask of, you know, in so many ways, the mask of religion and Christianity today. It's memorizing something written, regardless even of its accuracy in terms of translation, and if you can spit it out and, you know, basically just throw it out there, so long as you memorize it, then that's actually living it. But that's not actually living it. That's what it meant to be a hypocrite. That was the mask. It was living in the concept rather than, it was pointing at the Jesus finger and saying, oh my God, look at that. Look at the things he said. Look at these amazing words that came out of Jesus, Yeshua, whatever the name you want to call him, little Zeus, Hail Zeus. And it's like pointing at another person and saying that's the most important thing in the world, when, of course, what he was saying is it's not me, it's the one within me. It's about living it. It's about plugging into, being realizing that you're plugged into what it was plugged into as well, and allowing it to come through you rather than obsessing about what someone else said. And I do it with the buffalo hoop drum, how I'll have a couple people stand in front of the room, and I'll, you know, tump, 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 tump for one person, and they go, oh. You know, they have this really deep, profound experience with it. I'm right in front of their heart. And the open space, the back of the drum, is facing their heart. And they'll almost sort of wobble and go into it's just a really incredible experience. And then I'll have someone else stand about 10 feet away, And I'll look at them, and I won't ask the person that felt it. I'll ask the person that was 10 feet away, and I said, how did that sound for you? They're like, oh, it sounded awesome. It was great. It was really deep. And I was like, okay, you can sit down now. And then you'll see that other person that didn't have it right in front of them. They'll be like, well, what about me? What am I, chopped liver or something, or chopped tofu? And then what I'll do is I'll jokingly have them stand back up, and I'll say, okay, here, walk over to me, and I'll give them thump, 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 just a few thumps directly in front of their heart with the back of that buffalo hoop drum. And it's incredible to see their eyes light up, and you can feel their energy light up, and I'm like, this is what it's about. It's not about looking at someone else's experiences and hearing just sort of the trailing off of, like, the extraneous energy of that and looking at what that person said from their experience, although that may be a part of it. It's about plugging into the exact same thing that they were plugged into and having your own experience and expressing from that. And if we could get that, you know, that's that true open present moment, and you can't get to that without the forgiveness, without removing that layer of some other frame of reference and allowing that moment to speak to you openly. And that's where you come into the realization with the Aramaic and the teachings of Yeshua as a physics language and a physiology language and, you know, deep psychology, really, really deep psychology, the way of the soul. If we could just get that and lay off of the frame, step back and just see it for what it is. And what it is to me the most incredibly life-transforming, accurate, detailed, almost recipe for absolute transformation that I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen lots of things.
So, Dale, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
As you're talking several times now, it's resonated for me that one of the biggest pieces in Michael's work that is, to my eyes and ears, lost on most people is the three earliest memories of conflict. And this is an exercise that has people look at the three earliest memories they have of conflict and go back and put themselves in their state of mind when they were whatever age it was, whether it was 5 or 8 or 18, and think about how they felt, what they thought the world was like, what they thought people were like and relationships was like. And after you map all of that out, then think about the most recent conflict you had and how you would label and fill in all of those blanks. And for people who actually do it, they realize, oh, my gosh, the way I interacted with somebody 2 days ago when I was upset was determined by the upset I had when I was 5 years old. I'm living that same conflict over and over and over again. I haven't made myself open. I haven't dismantled that old material. And I'm living the same conflict thousands of times rather than moving from one new conflict to another and getting any resolution.
Mm. You know, my son, Mikey, too, when Michael was near Asheville in North Carolina a couple of months ago, I brought Mikey to... The first was Why Again, of course. The second, it was Healing Through Relationships. I'm not sure if it was the second or the third, but I brought my son Mikey, who's 12. He was 12 at the time. He's 13 now. That's big, huge importance, right? But I brought Mikey to it, and I said to Michael, I said, you know, my commitment is to sit here with Mikey, and I want to sit here and help hold that space for him. And what started happening was we had also brought our 3-year-old, Shamaya. It was just doing her gleeful thing. There was no, you know, nothing I would label misbehaving. She was just amazing, dancing around, being a little angel. But what had happened was my wife, Loretta, I said to her, I was like, you know, stay here with Mike. I'll take Shamaya outside so that, you know, you can do this. You can do this beside Mikey. And, of course, you know, this is something that I've been doing for 20 years. And, you know, I went out of the room and I went dancing with Shamaya on the other end of the property. And then Michael came around the corner, like, maybe 5 minutes later. And he's like, Mikey could really use your support right now in holding the space. And then I said, what about Loretta? And I went, doing, like a big, huge gong in my head, Dale. You know, you walked away, you made that commitment and walked away, not in a bad way. I was, you know, seeking to help her by helping with Shamaya. But, you know, Loretta was wrapped in her own thing there, and of course wasn't able to completely hold that space for my son Mikey, so I went back in. And I said to Loretta, I was like, you know, could you watch Shamaya? And I said, I want to make sure that you understand that your process is just as important as Mikey's to me. But I did make a commitment to Mikey to hold the space for him. And it was amazing because when I sat down next to Mikey, he was in absolute, it was almost like he didn't even know where he was. He couldn't think. He said he was starting to get a headache. All these things that had sort of popped up in Mikey's life over the previous few years and some of the situations that had happened with him, especially at school in, I can't remember which grade, there was a situation with a teacher that I may have mentioned on here before where, and it was one of the things on Mikey's page, it was the first thing he wrote down, and after that he went blank. He wrote down in his three earliest memories, one of them was how he had something that the teacher took away from him during the class because he wasn't supposed to be playing with it. I can't remember what it was. And Mikey started to feel upset about it. So she asked the teacher to stand up. The teacher asked Mikey to stand up, come up to the front of the room. And then she said to all the other kids in the room, she said, can all of you see Mikey? And you see him. He's crying right now, right? And they were like, yes. And she said, now I want you to laugh at him. And some of the kids were actually taken aback. One of his friends started crying, one of Mikey's friends. And most of the kids in the room started laughing at him. And it wasn't real laughter at first. It was like the teacher told them. But then all of a sudden, something clicked. Mikey said it was like the energy. He actually felt, I think he was like 10 or 9, he actually felt the energy click over and shift in the room. And all of a sudden, they were like really laughing at him. And wow, what a route that one put in. And that was that. And I asked him, I was like, well, what was it that you were feeling then? He's like, I felt helpless. I felt like I don't remember the words Mikey said, but basically he couldn't control the situation because he's not supposed to speak back, you know, to teachers, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And he just held it in. And it rooted itself in so many other relationships, and we're still working with this, with removing it with that same worksheet and the Why Again worksheet, so the short form too, that Mikey has a very similar experience with his sister, how Lucinda will come in and Lucinda will sort of shut her own emotions down in a certain respect and say just the right thing to Mikey to sort of completely, you know, flip out, so to speak. And the root there is that he feels like he can't control the thing. He's like completely out of control. So then what happens is he gets angry and there's a major temper, but then he gets sad and he gets scared of his anger because he's not supposed to show anger in the classroom, so to speak. And then all of a sudden he starts getting angry again because he wants to be able to let his sadness out. But then he gets, and it goes back and forth between just utter despair and sadness and anger, and it's just flip-flopping back and forth. And what it turns into is this explosive feeling of powerlessness where he just completely loses absolute touch with the present moment. And we're really, you know, we're working to release those layers in the moment with him.
Yeah, Dale, I'd invite you to maybe let him know, if you haven't done that already, that his anger is a drug. It's a way to anesthetize the pain of, and it's probably a whole complex of things, embarrassment, helplessness, can't control, but all of those things. And to let him know when that rage comes up, you know, at this young age, for him to understand that that's a drug and that he's safe, and it's safe for him to go beneath the drug and feel the pain, and that he's got the support for healing. It is just so monumental. And, you know, just there's so many people walking around in the world, that teacher, you know, many people would go into rage at the teacher. The teacher was probably 10 years of age when another teacher, you know, when they were a kid in school and sent them out, and or dad did or mom did or, you know, whoever their power person was, and they're just passing it on. And the teacher needs the same compassion that Mikey needs to let these things loose and be free of them. And that's forgiveness. And, you know, if you go into the ivory tower, I guarantee you every scholar in the ivory tower, if you bring them into relationship with their pain, will crack and break down. You go into the White House and the president will crack and break down, and so will his wife. and you look at the best of the FBI, the best of the military forces, the best of all of them, and what's underneath it all is that type of painful experience, and that's what brings forward rage into the world, into the classroom. And the first order of business, if someone wants to be in the religious life, is you got to handle that stuff in yourself or you're just going to pass it on. If you're going to be in the educational world, you got to handle that stuff or you're going to pass it on. And, you know, when you look at how many, you know, that's one experience for one young man. And how many experiences unresolved are there in the genetics of every person in our culture? And, of course, the terror of going in and looking at and dealing with that is huge. So what do we make out of these teachings of the man who showed us how to do it? We make it religious claptrap. We make it belief systems. We make it platitudes and, you know, repeat, repeat, repeat words, the exact opposite of what Yeshua said. He said, don't repeat. That's what the pagans do. That's what people that are locked into hostility and fear do. You got to do your work, and it's just, you know, that's such a profound example just from one experience, which I suppose that pretty much everybody can identify with that's listening. And what's in your field? You know, we got an advertising campaign that says, what's in your wallet? What's in your field that causes you? And I'm talking to me, and I'm talking to everybody in earshot. What's in your field that prevents you connecting directly to the active presence of love in this moment? And whatever it is, are you willing to confront it, face it, without that hostility, without any drug, but just straight on face it and forgive it, remove it, and be free of it? That's what our world needs more than anything today. And yet what it's being given is all kinds of stories and say magic words and incantations, and somebody else is going to fix it for you. Yeshua isn't going to fix it for anybody. Yeshua showed us how to fix it. He can't reach into your field and change your choices, however. You're the only one who can do that. Each of us has to do that for ourselves. And, you know, I acknowledge you and appreciate you for the space you're creating for your son to move through that and opening that energy window on another level for the planet. It's awesome.
What's in your field? I wrote it down while you said that. You know, there's a really, I've got like tonight and all day tomorrow and then Sunday, I've got some events at a place called the Intuitive Angel in Oswego. It's about an hour west of Chicago in Illinois. And tomorrow, one of the things we're going to do is dig into those I am phrases, the Anana phrases, Ina phrases from Yeshua, from the Gospel of John, Yohanan. And one of those phrases is that when he said, I am the gate. And of course, without going too deep into it, you know, in respect for time, I am, Inanna in Aramaic, doesn't mean I, Jesus, in any way. He would simply say Ina if he was talking about himself. What he actually said was Ina, Ina. And what Ina, Ina means is not I as a person, but the I within the I, or the highest witness, you know, the I within each of us, I should say. But when he says gate, that word gate, I've spoken about it many times on the show before, that word gate there, I am the gate, is tareya. And it talks about going in and out and finding pasture. Now, the thing that's so beautiful about that phrase, when we speak of it in terms of physiology or physics or deep, what I call deep psychology, that word, first of all, the word for gate, tareya, means an open door or a doorway or a portal or, again, a gate. It's the open portal. Now, when you go to the word pasture, one of the things that I ask people in the event, it's called Inanna Living from the I Am, I tell them, let's let go of the thought of a pasture as grass in farmland. You know, like when you say, what's in your field, I don't mean is there cow patties, is there, like, you got crabgrass, do you have like wild onions? When we say what's in your field, of course, you know, the listeners know this, we're not talking about a physical pasture with green grass. What we're talking about is your energy field, or you could almost say your own personal matrix, so to speak. And that, to me, when I see that word that was the word that's translated as pasture in Aramaic, if we can get out of the whole sheep idea and realize that it doesn't necessarily mean a pasture as in grass on earth, in the dirt, on planet Earth, but rather it means a fertile field. You know, what's a fertile field? The most fertile field that I'm aware of is the energy, the life temple, Haikla. He called it a temple, which means literally life temple or the embodiment of energy. So what is it? What's your overall energetic vibration? Because whatever it is that's in there that's obvious to you, whether you like that feeling or thought or you don't, that's what's going to create your life, because that's literally the matrix of the reality that manifests itself around you. So what a powerful phrase, what's in your field. So let's talk about T-shirts. That's the next step. What's in your field? That's powerful. It really is.
Nope. Yeah, it is key, you know, and when you recognize, you know, and I think we can take that one example, and of course we've had hundreds, thousands of examples shared throughout the years of the radio show, but you take that one example and then you extrapolate that out, you know, what happened to the little boy who stood and watched, Jeannie and I just decided to breathe through and watch the Godfather series again. And here's this little kid who's about 9 years of age who watches the mafia figure kill his father. And then at his funeral, they come after him and they kill his son. And this 10 or 11-year-old boy then watches as his mother, trying to protect him, his mother's killed and he gets away and he becomes the Godfather. Why is there no sense or feeling or remorse at killing anybody that gets in his way? You know, what are we as humanity carrying around unforgiven, unresolved? And what has gone on in the thousand generations that each of us carries within us? When Yeshua says the sins of the fathers will be passed on to 3 and 4 generations, and of course in the last few weeks we've been quoting from some of the latest research where they're discovering that that's exactly what happens. And if it's the foundation of the output of the mind, how insane is the mind going to be? How much hostility and fear will there be, especially and even toward the people we say that we cherish and we love, what comes up in us? And instead of owning what comes up in us, the average person talks about their spouse or, you know, some condition outside of them rather than, oh, look at what's coming up in me. Look what's in my field that I now have the opportunity to forgive. And it's just such a huge piece of learning to make that shift into. I'm willing to actually integrate the tools and move through everything in me that's less than love. What an awesome opportunity we have. And go for it.
Mike, we just hit the 10-minute mark, and we've had somebody with a hand up from area code 970. Are you up for taking this call?
Let's go for it. 970, you're on the air.
And just quickly before you take that call, someone in the chat room said that they tried to go to your website, Dale, and sign up for the workshops tonight and tomorrow, and they can't find the link to do that. Do they need to pre-register or just pay when they get there?
No, there's no pre-registration. It's just, you know, it's just show up, basically. Yeah, but everything's on the website. I mean, it's on my event calendar there, so.
All right, 970.
Be there or be squared.
Hi, everybody. This is Brad in Colorado.
Is it Brad?
Yep, it's me.
Hey, young man, welcome.
My topic I'd like to get a little clarity and input from all of you today is about judgment and justice. I have been seeking professional counseling to further unlock some of the hidden things and, you know, content of my mind and so forth that's been hindering me, holding me back, keeping me locked down, you know, from being love, holding a space of love, and the both giving and receiving of it. You know a lot of my background, you know, with the military, and then some of my power person dynamics that, you know, I suffered trauma when I was a child. I'm being counseled, you know, in certain ways about the justice factor being that even genetically, you know, from my Native American side, the voices I hear sometimes, I'm being told, are crying out for justice. And I don't know if I've ever really mentioned that, but I, when I was discharged from the service, I had a conditional discharge. I was dishonored. I was stripped of all rank and all privilege, including any kind of benefits from the VA. Now I'm being encouraged to go after these, to seek justice in that, that that's the problem that I'm having. That's the trauma that I'm having. This is causing all the other feelings that's blocking me out of life, and that what I'm doing is I'm judging, but I'm judging in a wrong way because I don't like what's going on. So I would like your take and some clarification on that, even if there's certain significant things from the Aramaic that can help me, you know, understand and do this, because it's brought up an incredible amount of upset in me.
Well, my delight in hearing your voice. We haven't heard from you in a while, so it's really awesome to have you back on the show. And what my take is that we live in a culture that, in fact, the word justice means vengeance. And so you might look at whether or not these voices that are calling, and justifiably so, for justice and, you know, vengeance is part of the culture, whether it was the Native American culture or the Western culture. And, you know, if what I'm looking for and the underlying brain cells are those of vengeance, then what's going to happen is I'm going to create more trauma. My input would be that a more important word would be responsibility. How do I take responsibility for the voice in me that was so insanely abused and calls for, in a certain sense, justifiable vengeance? And I quell and I forgive that voice in me. And in forgiving that voice in me, I remove another layer of hostility and fear from me. And now, in a connected space of love, taking responsibility for that part of me that holds pain, I forgive that. And as I forgive that, I'm empowered to step forward on another level to create responsibility in the people around me, so that I walk into a place like the VA. And because I am free of all conflict, because I am responsible for my life and what is inside of me, what I'm going to tend to pull out of the person in front of me is that same type of responsibility. Someone's going to look at me. I have a friend in Florida, and I used to go to the VA with him. He had a friend who was basically kidnapped and put into an asylum because they considered him dangerous, though he was no danger to anyone. And so this friend of mine had terror going to the VA. And so I would go with him. Whenever I was in town, I would accompany him. And he had been in the DMZ in Korea and experienced just horrendous, horrendous injuries, psychologically, emotionally. But he could never get any sort of support from the VA. It was just one put off after another, just blowing him away, you know. And finally, after tapping in and doing worksheets around the whole issue and cleaning that up, about a year ago, and this is since Korea that he's been fighting this battle, about a year ago, after maybe 3 years of serious work with worksheets, all of a sudden he come forward and say, you know, you should really have, from your injuries, full disability. And where he couldn't get support in the past, which, and I've known this guy for 30 years, he should have had it all these years, all of a sudden, he's got it, and he's got it locked in. It's his, period. No questions asked any longer. And so my input would be, if the voice that's calling for justice is really calling for vengeance, then I'd forgive and I'd heal the vengeance in me, the need to get even, which is certainly understandable with what happened in the Native American culture. You know, my apology for having the genetics of the group of people who did what was done to the Native Americans. It was insane. And as we each recapture that place in us and take responsibility for it and forgive it, then what will happen is – will tend to be an energetic space that calls forward responsibility from those in front of us, even an authority who don't know why they changed their minds and why they made a shift and go, oh, my God, we need to reassess this. This isn't fair. We need to do what's right here. Does that fit? Does that make sense for you, Brad?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because that's been my pretty much my thought and way of thinking on this and trying to process through it.
I understand.
It's a, you know, an inner conflict that goes on with me because, you know, I'm also half German. So I have a lot of those genetic things going on as well. So, but I just don't believe
it's
the right
thing. Abuse in those genes, too. Some of the heaviest abuse on the planet in those German genes as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, I suffered the wrath of a lot of that from the hand of my own father. So,
yeah.
But,
yeah, Brad,
you know,
we're down to just the last minute or so, and so we need to close the show out. But I would love to continue this conversation on Monday and continue to create support for you getting through this and getting the support that you need from the VA and supported for what you gave.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Hope you have
a
wonderful weekend.
It's in the plan. We're driving to Chicago. We're going to get to hang out there a little bit. In the meantime, check out Dale, www.daleallenhoffman.com. If you're going to be in the Woodstock, Illinois area this weekend coming up, Jeannie and I will be there at Unity Woodstock. We'll be doing a full week of workshops and right up into the Codependence Intensive October 31st in Michigan. Check out the website. We appreciate you. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow and give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.